Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So, first of all, I would like to thank all the people who set up the photograph earlier during the rains retreat. We don't always want to have to do extra work, and I also heard about leaks in the no water in the caretaker's cottage, and leaks in those pipes, and leaks in the ceiling. Now, sometimes even though you have like retreats, and there is trying to find as much time we have for ourselves, sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. Sometimes there's always distractions, interruptions. But sometimes that if no one knows what this path actually is, those interruptions are just, we take them on board with insights and with understanding, with compassion and kindness, and just say, this is, needs to be done, so let's do it. And if we just do it, it doesn't take that much time just to do these things. I often remember whenever I was interrupted when I was getting some nice meditation and had to do some sort of chore or do something, I realized interruption, that was not much of a distraction at all. But it was all my thinking about it. You know, why do we have to do this? We shouldn't do that. Why does this happen all the time? I'm getting into deep meditation, I have to get disturbed like this. And I found that the greatest disturbance is not the world, but the way we react to the world. Nothing disturbs us as much as our own mind. And if we change our attitude to that, it's not people disturb us, it's not the monastery, it's not the sicknesses, it's not the disappointments, it's just the mind. Just when we just try and control things, we don't allow this life to unfold. We're always fighting the world rather than making peace with it. That is where we get all our difficulties from, and the most distractions in the world are not doing these extra little bits and pieces. The main distraction is just this thinking which goes on in our head. But it's also interesting, you know, for me as a meditation teacher, to actually to see the way people react to the distractions in life also gives you a lot of information about how they are dealing with their meditation practice and basically their understanding of the Dharma, of Buddhism. Because those who are the control freaks, and we all control freaks up to a certain point, except for those who are arahats, we still control stuff. Yeah. Those who are anagamis are not controlling things in the world, and they still tend to control their mind, which is now part of the reason why they don't make that last step, to being fully free. But we always control a little bit, and after many, many years, and hopefully that the fewer years the better, you just realize just how little in this world you can control. And just always wanting things to be different is suffering. And just as we chant in the Dhammacakka Sutra, where it gives one of the sayings about what is suffering, is the separating from what you want is suffering. Or other words, association with what you don't want is suffering. It's always this wanting. And if, you know, we don't want anything, then how can we be separated from anything? Just that whole dukkha, the suffering, the tension, the problem, is solved just with a simple change of attitude, of surrendering to this moment, allowing it to be, being kind, being compassionate to this moment, opening the door of your heart to this moment, is a beautiful, beautiful way of meaning that you don't want to be anywhere else. You don't want things to be different. You don't want anything in this world. You know, if a monk like me comes along and say, can we have a photograph tonight? Yeah, okay, why not? you know, if something needs to be done, just there's a problem there, we just do it. We don't think too much, we don't struggle too much. And it brings to mind, you know, that story I already said in brief, because it's a well-worn story of Ajahn Brahm, of Ajahn Chah asking us to move all that earth. And 9 days moving wheelbarrows of earth. It was so hot and sticky. And now it's so dirty, you didn't have a chance to have a shower for a couple of days. If you try not showering, you know, in the jungles of Thailand, and in those days, Wat Pa Phong, it, you know, was a jungle, and, you know, little by little, even in the time I was there, you start to see just the fields start to encroach, and just the houses come closer and closer, but it was just the remnant jungle, and that never been really tamed. So I had all that heat inside, and it was very, very sticky. And lots of mosquitoes and stuff. It was very unpleasant. But it was, you know, great experience, you know, 9 days of pushing wheelbarrows. I'm not exaggerating, it wasn't till 9 o'clock in the morning to about 9 and 10 o'clock at night. That's why you didn't really want to have a shower. There's a whole queue of other monks by the well. And it's also, you're just exhausted. So, you know, it was dirty. But it was, you know the story, after about 6 or 7 days of that, I started to, you know, lose my equanimity. I started to suffer. I was in great mental turmoil. You know, thinking, why do I have to do this? This is not why I became a monk, to push wheelbarrows, or to fix leaks in the roof. It's not why I became a monk, to have my photograph taken. But then, when that monk came up to me and said, because, you know, you could see from body language that you're really upset and angry, there's only so much you can hide, and told me, he said, pushing the wheelbarrows is easy, thinking about it is a hard part. And that really, really hit me. And I was so grateful for that opportunity. There's so many different ways that you can learn, and so many different ways you can teach. And now to this day, I sometimes really wonder, you know, whether that was planned on purpose. I think, you know, these days, knowing just how incompetent the management was in that place, I think it was just incompetence. It wasn't some plan. But nevertheless, you know, I am open to the possibility. They talked about that and decided that would be a great teaching method. It certainly, certainly worked for me. And thank you so much to my teacher, Ajahn Chah, and his assistant Ajahn Liam, for making that happen. Because just that one insight, that one, thanks to that monk, I cannot remember who it was even now, such a long time ago. But you know, if I met him, I'd bow down to him and thank him. Because that helped so much. Doing it is so easy. It's the thinking about it is a problem. And of course, this is not just doing work like or having your photograph taken. It's about working in the kitchen. It's about eating your food, washing your bowl or someone else's bowl. It's like being on retreat. It's like sitting down meditating. It's like, you know, for the monks or the nuns, learning some sutras, learning Pali or whatever it is. Doing it, it's not that difficult. It's the thinking about it. That's where the suffering lies. Or the same in the world. Even being sick. You know, being, you know, getting old. You know, seeing other people die. That's not the problem. The problem is thinking about it. The way we react to it. And from that thinking, you know, we create all these cravings and wants and angers and desires and stuff. So how we can overcome that, especially because much of our thinking, you know, is, well, we can say wanting, but it's also why do we want things, is because there's a lot of ill will and aversion behind wanting. We're not happy here, so we want something else. As I've said, I think, already too many times during this retreat, fault-finding. Fault-finding is a negative way of looking at this world. A negative way is, you know, why do I have to do this? Why does this happen to me? You know, why, you know, I'm supposed to have a nice early evening, you know, when I was overseas recently. Why do I have to give me some more things to do? And, you know, because, oh, just as spent a lot of time, you know, just in the last few days in Korea, just messing around, talking to people. Why did I do that? It's because to make other people happy. It was just what you have to do when you go to these conferences. It's not just giving a talk. You know, people want to talk to you. And they paid a lot of money for my airfare. So I thought I'd better just give back a little bit. And it's of course very, very useful. That's why I went overseas. You know, because I am in that position, I can promote Buddhism, a good form of Buddhism. People listen, you go on the TV, you go on the newspapers, you know, with press conferences and stuff like that. So it's easy for people actually to be invited and listen to me, and now I've got an audience. So you can use that to actually to do something of good and worth. Even just that, at the conference, this one of the professors over there, a young man, he said, thank you so much, you're a Buddhist monk, and you're coming to places like this and showing that Buddhism is relevant to our modern society. He said he was a Buddhist professor in Korea, but he said he was disappointed with the monks. They just have a very narrow area of life where they teach, and it doesn't spread out, you know, to things like, you know, computing, to business. And so he was very, very happy that, you know, even I just came there and was prominent there. And so I take that on board, that it's very worthwhile. And so when these things happen, and you have to do these things, you just do them. And you don't think too much about them. It's even that, you know what happens, you know, whenever you have to give public talks, or you have to take funerals or stuff like that. And Ajahn Appi is skilled at that now, he's done so many funerals. But you probably remember Ajahn Appi, the first funeral you did. Well, how am I going to do this? And at first, or your first time you do the Patimokkha, can I learn this? This is just too much. When I was a lay person, I remember, so I was hanging out in the Thai temple in London for a while, and they invited me to come and witness the Patimokkha recitation. And when I saw a monk reciting for, you know, 45 minutes or something, the Patimokkha in Pali, I thought that was like psychic power, that was supernatural. If someone could have such a strong memory as that, honestly, I was just really, really impressed. And of course now you realize it's just not that hard to do for those people who have a good memory. And it's not hard, you just do it. It doesn't matter how long it takes. And when you realize that, you realize the whole problem in life is just we keep thinking far too much, and much of the thinking is fault-finding, it's negative. And that causes us suffering, it limits our abilities. At the conference, the main focus of my speech was about innovation. And in that innovation, it's always, oh, I can't do this, it's impossible. And I must admit that I was, because these were scientists rather than Buddhists, I was quoting science. I was quoting the training which I had at my school and university especially. And in those days, you know, there wasn't any, we're talking today this in the car on the way back, it's just can-do attitude. At that university, if you wanted to try something, they never say, no, it won't work. They said, give it a go. Give it a try. And there was this inculcated in you that the future was totally open. And you can make of it whatever you wanted. It was this incredible freedom. Not I cannot do this, maybe I haven't done it yet, but that's no reason to push it a bit further and see what happens next. There was never this negativity, oh you won't amount to much, oh it'll never work, oh you're wasting your time. You know, who do you think you are to do anything new? And that is something which was trained into me, brainwashed into me, from an early age, and it continued during my early monastic life. There's no such thing as you can't do this. Just keep on going, and you'll get there in the end. And of course, that's what happens on this path of Buddhism. There's never any reason why each one of you can't continue on this path and reach the very, very end of the path. There's no reason why not, except when you get fault-finding and negative, and say, just think too much, and think with such a negative mind, I can't do this. That is the obstacle. The obstacle is nothing natural, nothing inherent. As I like telling people, if you're born as a human being, this beautiful, incredible rebirth as a human being, that is shining your incredibly good karma. That you have been born in a time, in an age where Buddhism is still flourishing, where the Eightfold Path is being taught and practiced, where you can see examples on that path. That is such an amazing stroke of good fortune. And that each one of you has come to a monastery, and this is a good monastery. That you come here and listen to great teachings, have the opportunities to get all the four requisites, you know, the food, robes, lodgings, and medicines in time of sickness in abundance. It shows you've got incredibly good karmic results. So I'm saying that because that should encourage you. That you know you've already got so far just to be here. Carry on, and you'll get even further. So don't think it can't be done. It is being done. And in order to create that more positive mind state, which opens up the doors to the deathless, which makes, you know, the future of a peaceful, beautiful, wise mind possible, you know, we just basically, we just change our attitudes. Let go of the fault-finding mind and use the antidote of kindness, compassion, which is the antidote of negativity. Now we start because, you know, we have fault-finding of I don't like this and I don't like that. And I suppose it's been a long time since I started, I think so, anyway, I taught this over in Korea to a few people recently. You know, the simile of the circle and all the things which you like, all the things which you have embraced, the things you're good at, the things which you are proud of, all the things you find it easy to like are inside that circle. And just on the edge of that circle and outside are the things where you don't really negative towards them, but you know you don't really love them. They're not really in the centre of your likes, the centre of your circle. They're on the edge. People, yeah, you can get on with them, but they're not your best friends. Experiences, well, you just tolerate it. It's not such a big problem, but it's not something which you really aspire for and want to cultivate. They're just ordinary stuff, just outside the circle. And further outside the circle are things which actually irritate you and upset you. And the further you get away from the circle, the more irritating, angry, the more negative you are to these people and states of mind and things. And you can see just the universe of experiences is like this. In the centre of the things which you really like, and the further away you get from that centre, the more negativity, aversion, even outright hatred and disgust comes. And once you start to imagine the universe of emotions and feelings, people, experiences like that, you can understand where your circle is. Some people have a very, very small circle. There's only a few things they can really tolerate and like and have fun with. And most things are outside of their circle. Criticism, intolerance of people doing the wrong things, too much heat, too much sickness, death, other views, arguments. These are all outside of our circles. And there are some people who have expanded their circle so they can be at peace and tolerate and even like so many more things. And it gives you another way of looking at this path which we're engaged in. It's a path of expanding that circle, expanding its radius until it becomes bigger and bigger. And first of all, there were experiences, people, ideas which you couldn't really tolerate at first. They were outside the circle, but now you bring them inside. There are people who you didn't really like them, but you got on with them, but now actually you become even friendly towards them and respect and appreciate them. And then you expand your circle even further, because once you get into expanding this circle of what you can accept, embrace and be at peace with and even like, once you start expanding this circle, you feel that this is Dhamma, this is leading to more peace and happiness, there's not so many things I find fault with anymore. You're overcoming the fault-finding mind by including more of life inside rather than trying to keep it outside and get rid of it. You're embracing more, opening the door of your heart to more. And that path of opening the door of your heart actually occurs like that. You open the door of your heart to things you really like, and then things which you are, so-so. And then things which you dislike, and then things which you really hate, and then things which disgust you, and then things which are just incredibly hard to enjoy. You open that door of your heart to everything. Because in Singapore there were, you all know there were some problems with the Committee of the Buddhist Fellowship. It's pretty much over now. Just a few little things to tie up. But, I told one of them, I should mention names, he was still upset and angry at sort of what happened in the past, and told him, remember the Dhamma, the simile of the saw by the Buddha, even if somebody just grabs hold of you, your enemies, and they saw your limbs off, not with a chainsaw, that's too quick, with a blunt saw, the type of hand saw you see in the workshop. The Bodhidharma monastery, really blunt. And they saw your limbs off one by one with that. And they said, even if you have just one thought of ill will towards your torturers, and you don't deserve that, you're innocent, why me? This is not right that I get tortured like this. If you have one thought of ill will towards your torturers, you're not following my teachings, said the Buddha. And so it doesn't matter who lied or misrepresented you or mistreated you or gave you a hard time or tried to take over the committee and did this and did, it doesn't matter. The point is that, if you are told by the Buddha to have thoughts of loving kindness towards people who actually torture you and cut your limbs off for no reason at all except, they're psychopaths, then surely, you can have loving kindness towards those people. To all the people who have served from the beginning to right now on that Buddhist Fellowship Committee, why not have loving kindness towards them all? A heart of goodwill, wishing everybody well, forgiving their faults and their mistakes. Surely you can do that. And that, of course, really hit home. Because it is the suttas, the saying of the Buddha, and it is a famous, well-known saying. It's the same with us. It's not maybe terrorists or psychopaths who torture us, it's just life tortures us from time to time. Sometimes things are really hard to bear. And sometimes you think, why me? What have I done to deserve this? Why do I always have to do these things? Why can't other people do the right thing? But that is missing the point. That is giving ill will towards the experience of life. So you can expand that simile, even if life, the experience of this world, this universe, this life, sort of tortures you. You're on a retreat and you've got to meditate for another few days. Oh God, it's like being tortured again. Or, you know, you just don't want to hear a talk. Oh God, another talk, same old, tortured again. Or you have to have your photograph taken, because it doesn't work this week, you have to do it again next week. Oh no. You're missing the point. Now for me, that 9 days I had to push those wheelbarrows, you've only had your photograph taken twice. Now the last time, you know, maybe it was arranged that it didn't work out to make you do it again. Maybe we can arrange that it doesn't work out again, so you have to do it a third time. I learned from Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Liam how to do this. And they waited you down and think, oh no, why do we have to do this again? So, okay, let's just do it. Then you understand that teaching. Then you're expanding your circle to be more tolerant of the world, of life, of how this universe works and how your body and mind work. You're not so controlling, not so wanting, not so fault-finding. Well, it should be this way. We all know how the world should be, but it's not the way the world is. So, after a while, I've been here such a long time, you know, sometimes you think, oh, these Anagarikas, look, guys, the Anagarikas are always like that. Okay, we ordain them and you change the people coming in there. The people change, but the characters and problems remain the same. Remember that, Vamahasapanya? You know, you think you get new people in, and just the same problems, the same difficulties, you get rid of a troublemaker, I guarantee another one will come in. It's life! You get the buildings done, you say, at last, the project is finished. I guarantee you, it won't be that long when you start something, new project. It is life. So because of that, where we understand with wisdom what life is and just how to deal with it, we understand it's not the world, not the life is not the problem, it's the way we react to it, it's our attitude towards it. It's the way we deal with life, not life. And as a young man, just wanted to save the world. No more wars, no more poverty, no more discrimination between some ways of life, indigenous communities or wealthy communities, let's treat everyone with respect. And over the years I've been alive, it's just the same problems. There was that case when, you know, being in Thailand for those first, you know, few years, you never saw a newspaper, you never saw TVs, you didn't have radios. I literally never knew what was going on at all in the world. Now, I think somebody told me that, so Britain had a new Prime Minister who was a woman. And I've come off it. Is this some sort of joke? This lady called Mrs. Thatcher. No, you don't get women as Prime Ministers in England. I couldn't believe it. And then the next thing, about a couple of years later, someone came into the monastery, and this is in Thailand, and they said, hey, you wouldn't guess what's happened. Your country, Britain, is at war with Argentina. No, look, you know, that's, we used to have wars in the old days. You know, we don't have wars anymore. With Argentina, maybe terrorist countries, but not Argentina. And it was true, the Falklands War. I just couldn't believe that. And so when I did start looking at the newspapers again, I noticed something, that the stories were always the same in the newspaper. You know, in the 60s, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, this decade, the story is always the same. Corruption, wars, bombings, football, sports, somebody winning, somebody losing. It's always the same. It's just the names changed, the countries, the characters changed, but it was still the same plot, the same story. And it clicked in me that this is life. Years go by, we always think we're different. We always think we're changing the world. The world doesn't change. Just the names change. The scenarios, the places, the locations change. But the actual story of this universe is people with greed, hate and delusion. Some people with more, some people with less. Some people do the harm, some people try and cure the harm. But it still always goes on. And something sort of clicked in me. So this is the nature of this school called this world. And just like any school, you can't fix up the school, your job is to learn and graduate and go through. And in fact, if you didn't have all those problems, you would not learn. You would not have the incentive to get wise and to learn some compassion, to expand that circle. And expanding that circle, I call it the circle of compassion. Inside is what you can be kind to. And after a while you're kinder, compassionate, open the door of your heart to more and more and more and more. Until that circle can just become bigger than the whole universe. The circle expands until it's got no boundaries anymore. Compassion without boundaries, that's called appamāna. You know, that's the four, what is it called? Things without boundaries. I forget what the usual translation is now. The unlimited abidings, infinite abidings. And that's sort of what loving kindness is supposed to do. Take away all boundaries. And I love the idea of no boundaries. Now, pamana means, it comes from, again, that wonderful Pali word, maneti, which is like to judge, to balance, to weigh. No boundaries or judgments or weighing. No lines drawn to separate the good from the bad. Just infinite compassion. And boundless. What does that actually mean? It means you've expanded your circle to the edges of this universe and beyond. So you have this beautiful opening the door of your heart to every moment, no matter what it is. You know, for having to deal with someone abusing you. Open the door of your heart to the fact that dogs bark. Opening the door of your heart to stupid things happen. The simile or rather the story which comes to my mind. Because I've just been staying in hotels the last 4 or 5 days. Actually they've been quite nice hotels. But the one before which I stayed out, before the rains, when I went to that, conference on Buddhism, women's Buddhism conference, the Sakyadita conference, in Indonesia. They put me up in a nice hotel. But it's a crazy hotel, you know, in just outside of Magelang, outside of Yogyakarta, in the center of Java. I couldn't believe that they have a hotel, and outside the hotel they have these cages for birds. There's some quite beautiful birds, and they shouldn't be in cages, but they were there. But the bird they had outside of my room was not a bird, it was a rooster. I'm not joking. And I just, you know, been talking all day, giving lectures, and being in Indonesia, I had not one moment of peace because everybody, actually that men's toilet was good because there were mostly women there. The men's toilet was my only resource because there hardly any men there. Outside, photographed, talking, because I'm too famous and popular in that country. And so about 10 o'clock at night, we finally made it back and had a shower, because there's no possibility of getting a shower at the conference venue. A shower and then lay down in bed. And maybe 11 o'clock or 11:30 finally fell asleep. 3 o'clock in the morning, because of the lights there, because there's always electric lights. And so the bloody rooster thought it was dawn already and started at 3. Right outside my room. And oh, no hardly any sleep that night. Welcome to the world. Stupidity reigns supreme in this existence. I mean, they're crazy doing stuff like that. But that's actually wonderful. So, yeah, it was very tiring and very unpleasant, but what a wonderful story to tell everybody else. More data, more material for my lectures. That has to go in the next book, The Chicken Story. But what happens is that you open the door of your heart to this life, to a chicken. Because I don't have any choice. I can lay there at 3 o'clock in the morning, just, no, I thought of it, I do admit it, going out and you don't do what to that chicken's neck. Well, I'm a monk and I'm too famous in Indonesia, that would really go in the newspaper because everyone knows me. Ajahn Brahm killed a rooster. So I couldn't do that. So what the only chance you have is actually to open the door of your heart to it. Allow the rooster to wake you up. Why not? Not the sound disturbs you, you disturb the sound. Ajahn Chah got it again. It's not the world disturbs you, you disturb the world. Wow. Powerful, deep. It's another way. It's opening the door of your heart to stuff. But to me, that is compassion and kindness. Compassion and kindness is not just to beings, it's to life. Open the door of your heart to having to have your photograph taken. Now, you had it easy. Last night, I gave a talk in Singapore on the way back. And of course, people haven't seen me for quite a while. So they're needing more photographs. It's a crazy life. People lining up all the way down the stairs. And when you know, you just come back from Korea, really tired, long flights. You know, gave a talk in Google yesterday afternoon, Google Singapore again. Oh, by the way, the latest news, if you want to get hot news, is Chade Meng has resigned from Google. That was yesterday's hot news. You heard it probably before the rest of the world. But anyway, give you a talk there. I'm going to another venue for this evening talk, and then afterwards you finish the talk about 10 o'clock, I think. And there's a whole line of people just getting your autograph of the book. There's a new edition of Good, Bad, Who Knows book. And who benefits out of this? I don't. All the funds, the royalties go to the nuns' monastery. I just work really hard for you ladies. I just get more books to sign and more photographs to take. And quite frankly, after a long day, it's very difficult to get your mouth to smile. You want to say, get out of here, give me some rest. Who do you think you are? But, of course, you don't disturb that. You open the door of your heart to this life. And it's because I can do that late into the night in Singapore. I'm supposed to be on retreat, rains retreat. Because I can enjoy it, it means I go to bed late and sleep deeply, happily, and wake up with energy. I can come back here after a flight, and a long flight again from Singapore, come back here and give a talk. That's why I can also meditate no matter what. I literally don't complain when I meditate. I just watch whatever's there. Tiredness, restlessness, whatever it is. I don't complain. I open the door of my heart to whatever I'm experiencing right now. Nimitta comes up. Tiredness comes up. I allow everything in to my circle. That's really powerful. Even just, can I say this? Even saying this is a big limiter in my front of me right now. Just thinking of that, just getting the attitude, is powerful. Because what you're doing there is you're letting things be. With kindness. Sometimes I do make the mistake of just not letting things be 100%. You do need that kindness. Last night, you know, I don't know where this came from, you know, but I it just happened in the question time. I told the old story of the donkey and the carrot, you know, just chasing the carrot, and then you struggle, you suffer all the life chasing carrots, and you never get the carrots. You know, all these monks, they say about nimittas and peace and happiness and great meditation and blah. I never get that. So unfair. Why? You're chasing that carrot. Stop chasing it. When you stop chasing it, it just comes to you. But that wonderful end of that simile, you stop chasing it, it swings away from you and swings back. And just as it swings back, you have to do the compassion bit. Carrot, the door of my mouth is open to you. Come in. But I mean, that's a bit of a funny little ending to it, because you'd imagine it just, the carrot just bumping against the donkey's teeth and it misses out. But that whole idea of embracing and opening up, you know, to the carrot coming in, that is a powerful part of that simile. Now open up to the fact that this peace, this happiness can come in. Strange thing, you know, but sometimes peace and happiness wants to come in, but you've closed your mouth to it, figuratively speaking. You haven't opened the door of your mind, of your heart, to this moment. Too much of a control freak. If it's happiness, but you want to actually do the happiness, you're too proud, too eager. But to be able just to let happiness come. You don't own it. You can't stop it. You just literally open the door of your heart so that when the carrot swings back, it goes right in. And this is where we are meditators. Whatever's happening, I'm opening the door of my heart to it. If you're tired, causes and effects, it's not going to work. It doesn't matter. I'm going to open the door of my heart at this moment, whatever happens. Tiredness, having to do stuff. I open the door of my heart to it. And that always works. You always get bliss, happiness, peace. No matter even if you're giving a Dhamma talk. However, if you fight it, which means you're trying to keep it out, you've drawn a circle. It's outside and inside. It's not boundless anymore. Then it doesn't work. When there's an inside and outside, there is wanting. So, okay, here we go, Mahayana duality, inside, outside. Open up that circle, it's all in there, everything. Pain, death, disappointment, everything. Therefore, you find a way to peace. It's incredible, powerful meditations. So if you really want to make the most of the last few weeks of this meditation retreat, the wasa, make something out of your life. You sit down, don't believe the thoughts, don't think about stuff. The thinking just will drive you out of this monastery, out of Dharmasara. The thinking, you know, don't trust it. You know, you're not enlightened, so all your thinking is a work of Mara. They're deceiving you again and again and again. As it's done for so many lifetimes, you're fortunate to be here. I know there's a few of you thinking of leaving, but my goodness, you'll regret it. I can't stop you, I know that. Never have been able to. But what are you going for? what you're going through. There's more suffering for yourselves. You got the path out, the escape route. Don't give it up so easily. And don't ever think you can't do it. That fault finding, that negativity, that's just a work of Maya. Never ever think you can do much more good for Buddhism outside. No way, there's so many lay people looking after Buddhism, not enough good monks and nuns. That's where the weakness is. That's where Buddhism is going to get strong. So, just do it. It's not hard to push wheelbarrows when you don't think about it. It's not hard to meditate when you know how to open the door of your heart to every moment. When you don't disturb the sound doesn't disturb you. So easy to do once you remember the basic instructions. And this evening it's about compassion, extending your circle. People, things which you rejected, you allow in. And if you do that, the kindness, compassion, the joy, that just gives you just that last little ingredients, the yeast which makes the bread rise. That last little sprinkle of salt which makes the mushy peas, oh, just like heaven. That is how you meditate, and that's how you can have a wonderful, wonderful time. And just like I enjoy myself immensely, and I want each one of you to share my joy. That's why I teach. May you all bliss out to the max. No, sorry, beyond the max. Thank you for listening.
Namo Bhagavate Sarvikaram Te Dhammase
Sadhu 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 Anumodam.
I love that. Arahan
Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavān
Sukhati Pano Bhagavan.